I got a gun. He got a gun. He got a gun. Everybody got guns.
In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, Jim Hoffman here for EMS Office Hours.
With Josh Knapp.
Josh, how are you doing tonight?
All right, Jim. I'm just looking at our topic and I'm just giving a big sigh. Like, really? Again? Are we really discussing this again?
Well, you know what? I figured since it's sort of a hot topic going on right now in a lot of the threads and forums and Facebook and everything. I know we've touched on this before and talked about this at least twice.
Yeah.
You know, from what I can see. So I thought, but it's always good, I think, sometimes. We did that a few months ago, the last time we talked about it. And I think that with the new thing that went on going on in Virginia, with them removing that requirement to let their EMS fire carry arms and, you know, the conversation that seems to be going on. You know, you always get new people coming into the mix with their opinions and their thoughts. And I think sometimes it's good to sort of revisit these subjects and give people that maybe haven't had a voice before an opportunity to either, you know, come on the show here and call and give their quick opinion or chat in the chat room about it or make comments, you know, on Facebook and whatnot. Before we get started, though, Josh, what I want to do is mention a quick sort of giveaway contesty thing. Kelly Grayson from Day in the Life Ambulance Driver is involved with the Kilt to Kick Cancer campaign where he's getting donations for that. And what I'm doing with Kelly is offering some free limited memberships to TurboMedic for people that donate to the cause. So since I was actually going to do my own little campaign with that to begin with, but since I'm kind of half Italian, I'm sort of anti-kilt. So I figured I would help Kelly boost up, you know, some of his donations. And hopefully get that done. So I'm going to put a link to that, direct link to that in the show notes. But if you're listening, you want to just visit the main Kelly's main blog, it's ambulancedriverfiles.com. And you should see a Win for EMS and Fire Study Software post he has there to sort of, you know, find out how to donate. And
you know, you could do something that might get a better response. You could say, listen, donate, or I'll put a picture of myself up in a kilt. Which I think personally would be more compelling.
All right, let me tell you something. I've got nice legs.
Okay. You know, when was the last time you saw
them? I've got nice legs. All right. That's how I saw them when I shaved them the other day, when I was shaving them. What are you talking about?
I thought it was, never mind. Forget it.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Let me see. I think got a couple calls in the queue, Josh.
Oh,
I don't want to
sure.
keep everybody on hold too
get
long.
Get them all on. Let's get this show rolling.
Hi, with Jim and Josh. Who's this?
It's Kelly. Up?
Hey, Kelly. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. I'm making it, man. How are you?
All right. Well, thanks for calling in. I think we got Russell in queue too. Russell, you there?
Cool. Maybe.
Oh, okay. I hear you. I hear you in there.
How you doing, Russell?
Good. I guess.
It's Josh. Well, hang in there, buddy.
So,
we're
Kelly.
Not done with the hour yet. Yeah. Kelly, hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Oh, and I just wanted to point out that, you know, our top fundraiser is for Kilt to Kick Cancer is Italian through and through.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, he's busting a move with a kilt. He's put up a kilted picture every single day of the month thus far.
Oh,
and he is monkey stomping us in the fundraising standings.
So wait, is part of the kicking with the kilt is you have to wear a kilt?
You don't have to. It's nice if you do, but you don't have to.
There you go.
Just do it.
See? Yeah, we just ask people to. Let me tell you something, man. You should try wearing a kilt just once, because once you let the boys breathe free, you will
never
go back.
They look comfortable.
They are very comfortable. I'm wearing one right now.
I take exception to that plural usage of boys.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, Russell, you can let the boy swing free, and he'll thank you for it.
The speed bag. And I can say that.
Oh, man.
Right, you can say I get away with it. Exactly. Exactly, Russell. So, Kelly, real quick, you want to just – I mean, I know I read your blog posts, and I sent your post over to Josh, the one you did on the EMS one, and also the one on your blog as well about the EMS crews and carrying weapons and all. You want to maybe just give your quick take on it just for the listener that hasn't seen the blog post?
Sure. You know, this all began with Tim Holman's presentation at EMS Expo in Las Vegas last year. On should we arm EMTs? And just recently there was a story in the Dayton Courier about Tim pondering arming the Germantownship EMS squad, the merits, pros and cons. He's not, you know, actively for it, but it is an option he's considering, and his presentation on it last year was very non-biased. Didn't take a position either way. And then I just read on EMS One about the Virginia governor considering repealing the prohibition against EMTs carrying on duty. And I thought it was time to revisit the subject. What many people are taking incorrectly from a blog post is that I'm very much in favor of it, which I'm not very much in favor of EMTs carrying weapons routinely.
You mean you're not a gun-carrying, bomb them all, leave God to sort them out, crazy nut?
No, not at all.
Sorry, man. I totally misread that. I really got that wrong.
I am a great, big, fat chicken with a 1911 strapped to my hilt.
That's a contradiction.
You know, what a no. I will run from the fight every single time, but don't be unlucky enough to catch me.
But the fact that you're wearing a kilt should say that from the get-go.
That's true. And believe me, it's kind of hard concealing a weapon when you're wearing a kilt, but it can be done. What I said in my initial blog post was that I can predict what will happen if Virginia repeals the prohibition of against EMTs carrying on duty and agencies start allowing it, which is nothing. Nothing's going to happen. People read this, and it's so hard to talk about guns in general without people just flying off the handle and start screaming at each other. It's hard to consider this issue dispassionately. But we have ample precedent that whenever gun restrictions are eased in an area, whenever they're relaxed, there are always these dire predictions of Wild West shootouts and blood in the streets and drunken fights in bars involving guns. And you name the fanciful scenario, and it never happens.
Yeah, I think you get a little bit of a kickback from that, and I'm trying to remember if it was in your article or someone else's where they said that, you know, most of these are emotional arguments, but they're really brought to the table by people who fear or don't understand firearms.
That is
But I don't agree with that. I mean, you have a lot of people who understand firearms very well. And can take either side of this argument. And you have to respect the people who understand firearms and take the side of the argument that may not be as popular with people who, you know, are maybe a little bit more pro-gun, and then you mix that into some of the overall political issues that encompass gun laws.
Well, you can always tell when someone has taken a considered position against the issue or against EMTs carrying weapons, because they sound well reasoned in their comments. If someone is relying on an emotion based argument, devoid of facts, and throwing out hyperbolic scenarios that will very unlikely to ever happen, you can tell that they're dealing from a position of fear and ignorance. I have no issues with someone who has considered the issue of going armed as an EMT and rejected it based on their analysis of the situation. But don't just throw it out for everyone because you're just scared of guns. And that's my issue. See, people think that because I said nothing will happen if Virginia allows it, that I'm very much in favor of EMTs carrying guns on an ambulance. You know, I've never felt that like I needed a gun on an ambulance. However, well, there was one instance where, you know, if I'd have had a weapon and the other guy had a weapon, I'd have probably shot him. That's once in I don't know how many thousands of calls and patient contacts over my career, just one time. But, you know, one time is all it takes. One time is all it takes. And I know that 99.99% of patient encounters, an armed EMT would not make a difference, or being armed would not make a difference for the EMT. But it really sucks to be that 0.01%, doesn't it?
The cost of
being wrong is your life. And because of that position, I will not actively contest any EMT's decision on that matter, provided that the laws and his agency allow it. I'm not going to tell another human being that they will be limited, that I think they should be limited in the means they will use to defend themselves. That's a moral and ethical objection I have to that. It's a personal decision to carry a firearm in the first place. And not everyone is up to it. And I wouldn't foist my decision off on anyone else, and I wouldn't want anyone else to foist their decision on me. You know, people read these articles like Tim Holman and I and the Virginia governor are going to go out and arm EMTs, and that's not the case. What is going to happen is if, and that's a huge if, there are so many obstacles to doing this that may not be surmountable. But if it ever happens, what's going to happen is the EMTs at those agencies who already possess concealed handgun permits are going to start carrying on duty. And not all of them will do it. But that's all that's going to happen. And these people are, by and large, the safest people you will meet in society. They are not. You look at the FBI crime database statistics and show that, you know, it demonstrates that crimes involving concealed carry permit holders are almost non-existent. As a matter of fact, they're about 6.7 times less likely to be convicted of a crime than the average member of Mayors Against Illegal Guns.
So, Kelly, let me ask you, though. I mean, I think you make good points as far as, especially when you talk about, you know, trying to tell people that they can't carry, you know, if it's their right, if it's allowed, and all. And I think a lot of the arguments you see, I think, that are cropping up is sort of that lack of training, the lack of, you know, that not even the training as far as firing it, but the training is psychological, when it's appropriate to use it, or the appropriate the appropriateness to unholster it. You know, and I think that is what seems to me to be the biggest, I think, concern that most people have.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that, you know what, we're not trained to do that. And on top of all the other training we have to go through, the constant continuing education we go through on the medical end of everything that we do, and we're still far from perfect in that. Now you start adding this sort of responsibility on, and that's more training that you have to be sort of current with. And, you know, I guess the concern starts becoming, you know, when is that training going to be enough as well? I mean, you get police officers half the time that don't know when it's right to happen, and the mistakes and accidents that they have. And they're in that environment all the time. You know, like you said, our thing is, you know, how many years you said, and you had that one time where you might have been able to you know, utilize that if it came to it. You know what I mean? I wonder how often that happens.
When it comes to it, the vast majority of police officers will go their entire career without ever discharging their firearm in the line of duty.
Right.
You know, I'm going to add to that, Kelly. But, you know, I'm going to add to Jim's statement. It's not only about training, and I think training is an interesting way of looking at this, but it's not the most compelling. I really believe the most compelling is that we in emergency services, and especially in patient care emergency services, are in a completely different dynamic. And I think that when you start talking about that dynamic and you look at what it takes, first of all, I mean, you know, and you talked about it in terms of combatant, non-combatant, and there's also when you start to get into, you know, serious firearms training, they talk about predator-prey relationships and, you know, are you ready to not just pull a trigger on a device mechanically to, you know, expel something to kill something else. Are you ready to take a life, you know, jump on it with your claws extended, take that life? And that's a mental component of, you know, firearm use in a combatant scenario that we keep in mind. But more importantly is what is our focus? And you know, you take a law enforcement officer and there's a sort of a stepwise level that they can go to with both tools of combat and threats of force all the way up to the use of deadly force. We when you talk about EMS carrying a handgun, you're talking about graduating from your stethoscope and trauma shears to a handgun. Okay. And at that point in time, I think, you know, the dynamic really starts to unfold in a different direction. And that's really where I...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
There's just some feedback, Josh.
Go ahead.
That to me is the biggest issue and the most compelling argument against carrying a weapon on duty. I don't buy the police officer comparison, either for or against carrying of EMTs carrying weapons. Because, you know, you have some people for it who say, well, you know, as long as they have the same training as police officers, I'm for it. And other people say, hey, we're not cops. We don't have the same training as cops. We should never do that. The police officers is not valid.
When you say the comparison with police officers are not valid, you're talking about the sort of the brute picture EMT police officer, not in terms of the practical use of what a police officer carries as far as tools to escalate a situation or de-escalate.
I'm actually talking about the training in weapons proficiency and shoot, don't shoot. You know, it's a fallacy that police officers are well-trained in firearms. I'm going to throw that right out there. It is a fallacy that police officers are well-trained in firearms.
I won't disagree with that.
I have a bunch of friends who are cops who are excellent with guns. That is because they are gun nuts, not because they are police officers.
Right.
Most police officers are proficient with only the weapons that they are the manual arms for the weapons that they are assigned. They may know how to run an M4 carbine. They may know how to run a Glock 22. They may know how to run a Mossberg 500 or a Remington 870. But they are not that familiar with all the other weapons. If they are, it is probably because they are gun nuts and hobby shooters rather than any specific training they received in law enforcement. With dwindling training budgets these days, weapons proficiency and weapons practice is really going downhill. I think it's a fallacy that most police officers are better shots than your hobby shooter or a civilian shooter. I would grant that they probably have better initial training than John Q. Public, but most police officers only practice with their weapons before their yearly weapons qualifications. Now, there are exceptions to every rule, but once again, those people are usually hobby shooters who happen to be police officers. Not, and it's not because that they're their cops.
Russ, what are you going to say? You still there with us? Russell?
Yeah, I'm here. I was going to make a comment.
I'm as close to the microphone as I can be.
Go, man, go.
You suck. Anyway, I was going to make a comment that if we were... You got me going now. I was going to say that as far as cops being proficient in firearm use, I mean, we only need look at, what was it, Empire State Building?
Oh, yeah.
A couple weeks ago? That, I mean, they fired how many times and only hit the guy four times and ricocheted,
they hit 14 civilians other people. And one perpetrator. Yeah, they... that was some pretty poor shooting.
You know,
go ahead, Russ. Sorry.
That's not really a knock on NYPD or cops in general, because I'm starting a police academy tomorrow. But
now I'm scared. Now I'm scared.
Well, and you can't validly recreate that scenario and compare their actions unless you have an armed shooter shooting back at you. You know, so I'm not going to slam the NYPD cops for that. There are a number of videos where USPSA shooters reenact that scenario and do far better than the police officers, but they weren't being shot back at. There's another video by the same people on YouTube that compares, that takes USPSA shooters, civilians, and runs them through an approximation of the LAPD firearms qualification course, and they do far better than the police officers do on average. That's neither here nor there. You know, it's as Josh pointed out, it's not so much the training thing. I don't buy that civilians are poorly trained compared to cops, and I don't buy that just because you arm a civilian and he carries a weapon on an ambulance now that he's going to try to play cop. I don't buy that at all. I think Josh pointed out the biggest issue is that the combat mindset, and unless you, the mind is the weapon, the gun is just a tool. Unless you are mentally and emotionally prepared to take a life, you don't need to be carrying a weapon. And that combat mindset is fundamentally at odds with everything we do as EMTs. So if you're an EMT wanting to carry a weapon, you know, are you really prepared to go from a lifesaver to a life taker? That's a huge leap. And
then why are you on the bus in the first place if you have that mindset? I mean, unless somebody has just told me that.
Possible. Yeah, I think it is possible to have that mindset. I don't know, and that's one reason I don't think I'm carrying a weapon. Even if it were it would have to get a lot rougher on the streets I work for me to even feel the need. And even then, I would wonder how it would affect my mental interaction with my patients. Even if I propose, if this were to happen, I would strongly favor concealed carry over open carry, because I don't think there's a deterrent potential for open carry. But even though, even if no one knew I was carrying but me, I'd still worry about how that would affect the way I view my patients. So, I
think that's a really important statement that you just made, is, you know, that each requires a mindset. And I think that it really requires a step further down that road of that each requires a mindset, because when you're in a medical mindset, you're fully given to that mindset. You're in a diagnostic mode. Your eyes and ears are open to the medical things that may happen or that are happening, are occurring, and you're trying to decipher that. Just the same, and you're 100% committed to that mindset. I'll submit to you that if you're in the combat mode, you're in a fight, survival, tactical mode, and that in and of itself takes 110% of your mindset. You can't do one and split to the other. I really feel that that's a mistake.
Well, I don't fully agree with that. There are, you know, and I hate to use the word threat levels because of TSA's nonsensical color coding system, but, you know, most defensive handgun classes and most tactical classes, they'll teach you about threat levels. You know, you have condition green and condition yellow and condition white, and and condition red and all this kind of stuff. But basically, it is all about situational awareness. And there are differing degrees of situational awareness. You know, and in my EMS 1 article, I talked about Tip Tightsorts, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, his training class about self-defense for EMTs. I think every EMT ought to take such a class. Because, you know, part and parcel of a concealed handgun course is the caveat that the only gunfight you are guaranteed to win is the one you don't get into. And it's all about nonviolent conflict resolution and avoiding the gunfight in the first place. That is the focus of the deal. But how do you do that? Situational awareness.
Yeah. But the thing is, don't take stupid
chances just because you're carrying a weapon. You avoid conflict whenever necessary. If there is a means for you to escape, by all means, utilize it. The gun is to come out of your holster only when you have no options left and you feel that it's necessary to take a life to preserve your own. And that's a common facet of every defensive handgun gun class you will ever take. But not every class is created equal. And in fact, some handgun or some permits are issued without need of a course at all.
Kelly, the thing is, though, is there's not you don't see a lot of emphasis on that, right? The stage away, the get out of there if something happens. You know, you don't see a lot of traction with that as you do with carrying a weapon. I mean, shouldn't it be more focused on providers doing that?
You mean in the training classes?
Well, no, not in the training class. I mean, just in general, like in general conversation. You look on, like you know, your blog post on Facebook, EMS 1. I mean, this thing about carrying weapons in EMS seems to have gotten a lot of traction, a lot of comments. I'm seeing 100-something comments on some of these threads.
Oh, yeah.
But yet you don't see as much of that in a – somebody was to put down anything about situational awareness, you might get one or two comments and then the thread dies.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
it's not sexy enough
because there's not a gun involved, you know?
I think if this were to become a reality that Virginia EMTs, or for that matter any states, my states, EMTs were suddenly allowed to carry a weapon on duty, I think that a class similar to Kip's about defensive techniques, breaking holds, you know, some basic martial arts self-defense, and more importantly, escape and evasion and nonviolent conflict resolution needs to be at a minimum training to carry the handgun. I don't, my concealed handgun class was a 2-day course, and the first 16 hours and probably the first 12 hours of it were nothing but gun safety, firearms laws, and staying out of the gunfight.
Yeah.
You know, and people who fear weapons and don't understand weapons think that just because a man straps a gun to his hip that he thinks he's Billy Bad, you know what,
and
he's going to go looking for a fight.
I think
it's silly because, if anything, I am more careful and less likely to engage in a conflict with someone when I'm carrying a weapon. Because I know what the consequences are of carrying that weapon.
And the only thing that I'm going to sort of challenge you with on that is that, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree, is that in reality, 2 days, even 2 weeks, even 2 years is just not enough. I mean, if you're going to use something on the job on a constant basis, so it's second nature to you, it's got to be sort of a professional lifetime commitment. In the same ways that we commit to updating our skill sets, reading about, you know, the newest techniques, understanding what the drugs do, understanding what new drugs introduced into our patient population are doing, you know, that's almost the same sort of commitment. If not greater, because the responsibility is in some cases greater, that you're dealing with firearms. I don't see it as a casual acquaintance. And I think that there's this visual.
First of all,
go ahead.
It, No, you know, you're right, and it shouldn't be a casual acquaintance. You know, you shouldn't be casually acquainted with firearms and then go carry one, whether you were doing so in your private off-duty hours or, God forbid, on an ambulance. You shouldn't be. But the thing is people fail to realize that or are imagining that every EMT will carry one of these things, and that is just not the case. What's going to happen, and what I said in my original blog post and I said in my EMS 1 column, is that what will happen is those Virginia EMTs who already have concealed handgun permits, some of them will start to carry on the job, and that's about it.
You don't think there will be a motion for people to go out and get these permits because they can?
No.
Yeah, that'd be my concern, too.
I mean,
you know,
if they all they can already go out and get those permits, Jim, Josh.
Yeah,
they can already go out and get them. You know,
I think
if they haven't bothered to get them thus far, I highly doubt that they're going to rush out and get one just so they'll have the opportunity to kill a patient one day. I think that's a total fallacy.
Yeah, really. As a good paramedic,
gonna,
you really don't need a gun.
They're going to self-select, and the people who carry will wind up being pre-existing concealed handgun permit holders. You know, these same arguments were made when they repealed the prohibition against carrying concealed weapons on college campuses in Colorado. You know, oh my God, drunken fraternity parties, people are going to start shooting each other. Some professor's going to give a guy a D, and he's going to get capped, and yada, yada, yada. What happened? The people who were over 21, who had already gone through the legal hoops to get a concealed handgun permit and qualify with their handgun, just started carrying on campus, and nothing else happened.
You know,
potentially, that college campuses in Colorado are no longer de facto victim disarmament zones.
You know, I got Tim Noonan on the line. I think he might have a quick point of view on this, too. I don't know if he's still with us. Tim, you with us still?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Tim.
Sorry,
I think you need to have situational awareness of whatever is going on, and you need to know how to handle a handgun in a confined space, which is most of where we provide patient care. Problem is, when you're in a confined space, you're well within the 21-foot area that you're not supposed to use a gun, not really expecting to be able to outdraw somebody who's got a knife or just a fist or a club or, you know, a chair or whatever
happens
to be handy. And the idea of carrying into an EMS environment seems as if it would not appeal to somebody who has thought this through clearly. Where is the benefit in a confrontation? If you're reaching for a gun, you're probably doing the wrong thing because you're better off hitting them with whatever is handy rather than trying to pull a gun and shoot it while you've got a bunch of other people around. What if it's not the patient who's attacking you?
That's it. If a patient has managed to get into your rig at bad breath distances and assault you to such a degree that you feel that your life is in danger and you need your weapon, you've made several major errors in judgment prior to that point. What I think more likely to happen is, like the Houston EMS crew who was shot at, and the crew who was their rig was hit 17 times, or the New York medic a couple of years back who was shot at an accident scene. Had to take cover. You know, the gunfire is going to come from either some situation outside of your rig where it's going to happen. You know, inside your rig at bad breath distances, people say, well, what if they disarm you? You know, weapons retention is easily taught. And if the weapon is concealed, how are they going to take something that they don't know is there? You know, and if you have let a patient
properly
into your
concealed
rig, properly concealed, good point. If a patient is in your rig and in a position to grab your weapon and able to grab your weapon, you've made some serious judgment errors already. You know, if that patient is that much of an overt threat, why is he not restrained already?
Or what about in the residence, assuming you go into a patient's residence to pick them up and things suddenly take an unexpected turn? You're now trying to scramble to unholster a concealed weapon when that's probably not the right thing to do at that time. You probably are
too close to whomever
you
want to shoot. The right thing to do is turn around like a big chicken and run, if that's an option to you. Here, sir, why
it's
don't you
not
take my Life Pack 15 and while I get out of here?
Life Pack 15 makes a wonderful weapon if you're big enough to throw it at somebody.
Exactly.
It's like a cannonball.
Or just throw it in their path and turn around and run. You know, that those kind of... And people say, oh, you know, whatever happened to scene safety and staging and law enforcement clearing your scene beforehand, yada, yada, yada. Everyone knows those kind of scenes are not the ones that are going to kill you. The kind of scene that's going to kill you is the one that's innocuous, that you didn't have any of those things in place because no one expected it, and it went south on you in a hurry.
Sounds very similar to hazmat, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You know, I've been on scenes before. I was dispatched to a scene one time to a fight, and dispatch told me law enforcement was on scene. It was safe to enter, and I got there, and it was not a fight. It was a riot, and there were about 250 people out there, and they were beating the hell out of the one cop on scene. Yeah, wasn't really safe. So I pulled up and got out of my vehicle, hollered real loud over my PA system, told him I was going to let the officer's dog out, and I did. And then I got back in the rig and watched him bite people. But, you know, it's the ones that you're not looking out for that are going to do you harm. You know, again, I don't think it's necessary in my area and in my experience for me to carry a weapon, but my experience is not everyone's experience. You know,
hey,
I don't work out. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know. Just not to make you the poster child of, you know, gun advocacy out there. I know that you are, you know, pro-gun ownership and you've made clear the idea of responsibility and training. I want to challenge you to something, though, because, you know, you're a paramedic first. You've been in the pre-hospital care profession for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to come out with a challenge to your argument, how would you be able to even challenge your own arguments?
No. You know, no, I don't think I could.
Chicken.
No, I don't think I could challenge my arguments because, you know, once again, the issue of self-defense with a firearm is a personal decision, you know, and I've made that decision for myself. I will not make that decision for another person, whether to tell you you must do it or to forbid you to do it. And I made that decision knowing that my experience is not the same as everyone's. And for my, you know, my philosophy is it's just hard. It's hard to articulate. You know, you have so many people with the that say, well, you know, yeah, violence only begets violence, and you know that's true. And I fervently hope so.
Well, sometimes you have to stand up. You know,
that's right. If someone initiates violence against me, I fervently hope that I can reply with as much or more violence than they can potentially deal with. I want to make them pay.
I'm giving you this argument because I think that we need to – this is an important subject. I think it comes up a lot, as Jim said at the beginning of the podcast. I think it needs to be as thoroughly discussed as we can do it. But when you take that argument and say, you know what, this is for my protection. This is an aspect of my safety on the job. It's a mindset that I'm willing to undertake. I get all of that. And, you know, as a person who is – you know, I live in a very gun-controlled city and state, but I have tactically trained with multiple firearms and, you know, and have my own attitudes on shooting and whatnot. But there's a big, I think, gap a mindset that needs to take play or needs to be sort of pointed out between, and you said I'm not in for the police officer comparison because you don't think that holds water. But there is one different dynamic with a police officer. A police officer is using, not only as I discussed earlier, has multiple levels of initiation and escalation that they can go through and de-escalation. And de-escalation as well. I mean, let's keep it, you can go up and down that ladder. But also, they're there for the public safety. And I think that, you know, when you're taking in that consideration and that dynamic, it makes a whole big change between carrying a firearm for your own safety because you're in a dangerous job and you may not have the support you need as soon as you need it. And I buy that argument, actually. But
well,
there's
here's
an aspect
the thing,
of when you're out there. Okay, go.
Go. No. Finish your statement because you're going somewhere with it.
Yeah, there's an aspect of when you're out there and you're focused on your dynamic as a pre-hospital care provider in a changing in a fluid situation, more than likely. You know, how can you now take under that umbrella the idea of caring for anybody else?
Well, I'm
or protecting anybody else, and that's the direction.
Well, first
I'm really
of all, going. I carry my gun for me. I'm not going to intervene in some situation where the to defend another person. Self defense. It's a personal decision for me to carry a weapon, and it's to protect me and my loved ones who are unable to defend themselves. So, if I'm if someone walks into this movie theater that my daughter and I are about to walk into and start shooting, the first thing I'm going to do is try to get her to the door. I'm not going to start shooting to protect the other theater goers. That's, you know, if they wanted some means of protecting themselves, they should have carried it. I carry a gun because it's too heavy to carry a cop. and the where your argument breaks down, but only slightly, Jim, because I think most people will agree that it is the police officer's duty and role to protect the public. But in at least one case, the Supreme Court has affirmed that police officers do not have a duty to protect your personal safety. There is Supreme Court precedent on that very issue. They do not have the duty.
Hey, Kelly, I'm
you.
Sorry. You broke up. They don't have the duty
I'm
to
sorry.
Protect. Oh, this is Josh. You don't have the duty to protect.
That is not their duty.
To protect the public.
Their duty is not to protect the public from harm.
What's their duty?
To investigate crimes and enforce laws. And I don't think the Supreme Court was saying that the police have no role in public safety and protection. What I think they were saying was affirming that first and foremost, self-defense, protecting yourself, is our duty. And police officers are only there to augment that. So if you want to advocate your self-defense to another human being, well, fine, that's your choice. I choose not to.
No, it's just an interesting, I feel a little bit caught. I wasn't aware of that Supreme Court ruling at all because I was going
to
say.
I'll have to dig that one up. It's fairly commonly referenced in many of the gun forums, but I can't provide you an actual citation right now, so if I can get it for you.
Because
but in at least one case.
the next logical extension is that, you know, when you're out there for, and this is, you know, this has been cited several times. I mean, not as, I don't mean cited as in terms of law, but in articles and such, when EMS or paramedics or fire are out at the scene of a dynamic public occurrence, there is an aspect that they're there for collectively for the public good. And if you are known to be armed as part of your role or roles and responsibilities or allowances, you know, within the capacity of your role, couldn't there be some backlash if somebody, if a paramedic or an EMT or first responder basically stood up to exactly the point that you just made of, hey, this is for my own protection, it's not for yours?
Well, that's I disagree with you. Let me turn that around on you. Let me turn your question back around and ask you, just because someone is carrying a weapon for their own personal defense that they normally carry in every other aspect of their life, and now they just happen to carry it at work, how have you added to their duties, their roles, and responsibilities? What have you added to their roles and responsibilities in carrying that weapon in just one more venue? The only reason they're carrying it in the first place is to protect their lives when no other option is available. So,
right. I agree with that. But the kicker is it's the assumption in that change of venue, because you now have a patch on your shoulder, because you now represent a government entity. And we all know about counterterrorism and terrorism and, you know, homeland security, where there's an aspect that we are always – we need to be more vigilant than we are when we're off duty, because once you have that patch on your shoulder, once you're in an official vehicle, you represent to some the government. So in that
Supreme Court case that Kelly is referencing is Warren versus District of Columbia.
Okay. There you go.
Give me a second. I'm still reading it. It was in 1981, though. So.
But I mean, there's not even an argument about that. I mean, I think it's a great point, and I accept that point. You know, there's an aspect of what's our first training. The first day you get into any first responder class, it's your safety, your partner's safety, and if the public's lucky enough, they're included. And I absolutely buy into that rule. And you know, I'm a WMD instructor. I teach awareness about this. I teach operations about this. It's an important point to drum into people who respond to public occurrences, you know, to an event that happens in the public domain. It's important to be aware. I think tactically, even if I don't agree with you that in a responder mode, you know, you should have a weapon on you, because I really am part of that mindset that the dynamic is so changed that to be a combatant, non-combatant, and a healer or a rescuer, it really confuses the situation, and I think makes it complex enough that it makes it dangerous for you as a responder. Yeah. But even if I go along that route, Kelly, I'm still going to be fervent about the idea that every first responder should be trained. I don't care if you're in a handgun carrying city or jurisdiction or not. You should be trained on how to handle a firearm. You should be trained on what they can do. You should be trained on tactical awareness, because you are in the environment where you can find them.
And you're expecting me to disagree with that?
No.
I agree 100%. I think if you're going to carry a weapon, you need to know how to use that weapon, and more importantly, when not to use that weapon. I just reject the notion that a particular standard of training should be what we aspire to. I think we should have some training. I think that weapons proficiency, particularly the applicable laws, shoot, don't shoot scenarios, and a course similar to KIPS in defensive tactics and escape and nonviolent conflict resolution should be mandatory. I don't really buy the argument that we have increased liability because we're armed under color of authority. I think that would only apply if an agency told its employees you must carry a weapon. You know, and then it becomes part of your role and responsibility at that agency. You know, you've given it an official stamp. And I think that's a very different thing.
Do that.
Yeah, but I also think there's
I think it's a very different thing. Go ahead.
Because I think there's a complexity that's added in there that's not necessarily something that we can deal with here, but I think certain jurisdictions, first responders, under certain scenarios, gain peace officer status. And at that time, as a peace officer, now you've changed the entire dynamic of what you're there for.
But that is that would be problematic, but insurmountable? No, I don't think so. I think that's just all that would require is a clearer definition of roles and responsibilities in those situations. You know, and we've already got some people who are there were some people. One gentleman commenting on my blog who is a rabid anti-government libertarian neo-anarchist who is has some pretty wild positions. When his first comment on my blog when I posted that article about Virginia was, "Hey, great forum. Glad they're able to carry weapons now. All this means, though, is that I will never call 911 in my state again because I will not allow an armed agent of the government inside my home." And he wouldn't accept that an EMT is not an armed agent of the government, but you know that's the argument he's using.
Perception
to him
is everything.
Real enough. Whether it's valid, I totally disagree with. But to him, it's real enough. You know, get more of the things that we'd have to work out if this were to ever come to pass.
Right, right. And that's the part that I really wanted to open. It is certainly, and I don't think that you're arguing this anywhere, Kelly, but it's certainly not a cut-and-dry scenario
What I think before I have to let you guys go, because Finding Nemo 3D is about to start, and the big hairy gun-toting redneck has to take his daughter in to watch the cartoon, is that all the
you
all
left
the
out
arguments,
kilt wearing?
Yeah, kilt wearing. All the arguments and pros and cons and everything that we have discussed thus far are just the minutia. The crux of the matter is what Josh pointed out before. Are you ready to take a life? You know, we got guys on that posting on these Facebook forums saying, "I don't think any state stricture should infringe on my Second Amendment rights. You know, if I can carry off duty, I should be able to carry on duty, yada, yada, yada. Or I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Or when the police are minutes, when seconds count, only police are only minutes away." You know, we try to distill our arguments into these silly little sound bites. But the whole crux of the argument is, if you are ready, if you think you are ready to carry a weapon, are you sufficiently committed to be able to pull the trigger and get the, committed with training and observing all the legal niceties, are you ready to take someone's life? And I don't think that a lot of the commenters really are. I don't think they have considered deeply what it's going to mean as a paramedic, someone who is sworn to uphold life and to save people whenever possible, what it's going to mean to turn around and shoot someone. You know, and any sane human being, be they one who supports the idea of carrying weapons or one who is fervently against it, any sane human being would give good consideration to that before making that decision.
You know, Kelly, I think that's the most salient point of this whole discussion, and I'll even further it to the point of saying that a lot of people who carry guns on a sport basis and shoot at paper targets may dream of those sort of scenarios but are never really truly committed to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think most people, you know, I've grown up around guns. I've been around people who like guns all my life. I go to gatherings with the gun bloggers, and we all get out and we drink alcohol and we show each other our guns. You know, and people say, oh my God, alcohol and guns. You would not believe the deeply ingrained safety culture that is present at these things. You know, we were joking around one day after watching, you know, one person pull out his carry weapon and say, hey, that's pretty nice. Let me see it. And even after having unloaded the weapon, checked to see that the chamber was clear, and handing it with the slide lock back to another human being, they would take it directly from their hands, check to make sure there was no magazine in it, and check the chamber or cylinder at least twice before doing anything else with it. Because safety is so ingrained in these people that they find it difficult to not be safe. That's the kind of people I'm used to being around. And I know I've been to gun ranges where there's some idiots in the lane next to you. I know that not everyone's like that. So my comfort level with guns is probably somewhat a bit of selection bias, because all the people I'm around live, sleep, eat, and breathe firearms, and they're very comfortable with them. I realize that not everyone is like that. That is why, you know, I wouldn't be against additional training to carry a firearm. I still am not sure that I would support the idea of an EMT carry on duty, but I'm not going to actively oppose that decision for anyone else. So that's my final thought on the matter.
They made some good points, right. Kelly. I appreciate you showing up.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I enjoyed it, man, and thanks for the props to Kill to Kick Cancer. So y'all, if you know of any EMTs with who need some study software or firefighters, come by my blog, donate to Kill to Kick Cancer, and you'll get a chance at winning some study software. And now I'm going to watch Nemo's dad and Dory go find Nemo.
All right, Kelly, have a good one.
Talk to y'all later.
All right, bye-bye. Be safe, Kelly.
Bye-bye.
That's actually perfect timing, because we're just about out of time anyway, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, listen, he made good points, and I agree as far as the whole thought process with, you know, not telling somebody that they can't. But I do think there has to be more training involved, and I can't help to think that, you know, you compare police officers and paramedics. You know, police officers go into every scene sort of having that mindset that they might have to pull out their weapon, and most paramedics and EMTs don't have that mindset going on calls. You know, and if they have something concealed and the situation arises, that's one thing. But they're not going to every situation sort of anticipating, you know, having to pull out their weapon. Their mind is someplace else. You know, then I don't think they're as mentally prepared on every call, you know, as a police officer might be to pull out their weapon. You know what I mean? Because the calls that we come in contact with, like Kelly said, where you end up in that situation, you're not expecting it. You know, most of the calls where you might expect it as a paramedic, where you might encounter that, you know, that's when the scene's going to be safe. You're going to stage away or whatever the case may be, you know. So you're going to be taken care of. The scenes that we come in contact with are going to be the ones where you're not expecting it, you know. So.
Well, I think that he said it at the end, Jim, when he said, listen, you know, I may not necessarily be for EMTs carrying, but I'm not going to actively be against somebody carrying for their personal protection. And yeah. And I think that sort of is the best clarifying statement out of it, that it is a different dynamic. I don't think he's not he recognizes that. I think that he supports that idea. Mm-hmm. And I think that the aspect is training is the cornerstone of any of these decision-making processes.
I mean, listen, we've talked about this before, even when Tim was on, and where we talked about how, you know, the people that sometimes that can't get into the police academy become EMTs, you know, because what's the requirement, you know, between the two? You know, the psychological evaluations and things like that, you know. And, you know, it's not to say that people in EMS are unstable, but, you know, you've got that certain mindset going on. And again, it doesn't mean the police are 100%, you know, competent either, you know. But I think you can still, separate the two enough where you can definitely see a difference in their preparation when it comes to caring. You know, never mind the perception. I mean, we can go on and on with this because you get public perception about this too. If they know that you're carrying a weapon as an EMS provider, you know, and how they're viewing us, you know, at that point as well. That's a whole nother, you know, argument there. So.
I hear you, Jim.
So, I had to mute Tim, everybody. He was calling from work. Tim, I appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry I had to mute you there. I came back, but you must have hung up. Maybe you got a call. I'm not sure. But I had to mute you because you had more background noise for some reason than usual today. So I had to go ahead and mute Tim out there. So I apologize, Tim, for doing that. I didn't want to, you know, cut you off, but
Tim, he's just saving me because we know how much you love to jump on what I say.
No, not that. I think usually he calls in and there's usually some background noise because he's at work, so I understand that. But I think today, I don't know, must have been a little bit extra today for some reason. Maybe where exactly he was, who knows? Ross, you still with us? I know you were trying to jump in there. I saw you in the chat room. You still online, or did you leave?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, sorry we didn't get to you too much here, buddy. I appreciate your calling in, though.
Kelly stole the show.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it happens. Sometimes you get a star on every episode, right?
Yeah.
But, Russ, you're still blogging out there? I know you've been busy and doing other things. You're still blogging there? I think you're on the First Responder Network now?
Yeah, I try to as when I can, but...
All right.
Life is hectic at the moment.
Yeah, be sure to, send me a link to your most recent thing. I'll put it up on the show notes. People can go check it out. Of course,
hey, Russ, what is this with you going? Wait a second here. What is this with you going into the police force? What's going on?
Where I'm at in Tennessee, Shelby County, the sheriff's office has a reserve deputy program. Which is you're a fully trained, certified police officer, but you function in more of a reserve capacity. So
you're not hanging up your shears and stethoscope.
Oh no, I don't carry those anyway, so I really wouldn't be hanging anything up. But no, it's more of a reserve thing. You know, I have to do this police academy, which is going to just make things a little bit tougher over the next 6 months. So after that, then I have to get what they call one-man certified, which is a bunch of ride-alongs with a field training officer, and that takes me another 8 to 12 months. And then, so in 2 years from now, you know, I'll be independent,
yeah,
pretty much, but
exactly.
So, yeah,
it'll fly by, I'm sure.
Yeah,
they give you a real gun instead of the rubber one that they make you carry.
Yeah, I'm no longer Barney Fife.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, with one bullet. Here's your one bullet.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is that there's no distinction really between the reserve officers and the full time officers, so the public can't really tell the difference.
Oh, that's good in that area.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We're just about out of time. I don't want to cut you off we're hitting the wall here. So thanks for calling it. Russ, of course, you're invited back anytime you want to, you know, pop in the show. I'd love to have you on here.
Of course.
All right. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. Take care, Jim.
All right, everybody, that's it for tonight's episode. I know we just kind of scratched the surface on this topic. There's a lot of passion about this, and just reading so many comments on Facebook and the EMS1 article and Kelly's article. I mean, it goes on and on, guys. You know, we're just kind of scratching the surface here. If you want us to kind of target a certain element of this discussion, let me know. Send me an email. It's jhoffman@ems-safety.com. Be sure to post your comments below. We're here at Blog Talk Radio over on the blog at emsofficehours.com. And let us know what you think and what you thought about the comments we made tonight. So until next week, guys, as always, Jim Hoffman, EMS Office Hours. Stay safe.